17. What do they do with a leftover Padawan? Wreath had been pondering this question since a few hours after he'd learned of Master Jorah's death, as soon as he'd recovered from the extreme shock. It stood to reason that he'd be chosen by another master eventually, but when and how? It was a measure of the peace and prosperity of the Republic that Wreath had never known an apprentice in the same situation. When he'd been summoned to another meeting of the Council, he'd assumed that it was about the Nihil he had identified on the Amaxine station. Wreath was working hard to think of them that way, as the Nihil instead of Nan and Haig. Ferocious warriors instead of refugees. Resetting his thinking, excising the kindness he'd felt toward them, might help him handle some of the intense shame he felt for betraying knowledge to an enemy. To the enemy who had killed Master Jorah, no less. They had made a fool of him once, but never would again. The Council rarely concerned itself with individual Padawans, so probably they sought yet more information about the Nihil or wanted to chastise Wreath for his carelessness. Maybe both. Instead, as he knelt before them, Master Adampo said,
"We wish to speak with you about your new master."
"Has someone already chosen me?" Wreath couldn't imagine who. All the masters he knew well had apprentices of their own, except, of course, those who had been with him on the Amaxine station, but surely one of them would have spoken to him first. Master Rosason said,
"No, you have suffered bereavement, and you alone can tell us the correct moment to resume your training."
Wreath hadn't thought about when he'd like to start training again. Padawans didn't get to make many huge decisions on their own, as a general rule, and his first reaction to this one was to wish it away. Choice felt like a burden. His grief for Master Jorah was already heavy enough.
"Given the extraordinary circumstances," continued Master Rosason, "we also welcome your input as to what sort of assignment would be most beneficial to you in future."
"What do you mean?" Master Adampo held out his hands, an expansive gesture.
"Some in your situation might request a frontier assignment in order to fulfill your late master's wishes. However, others might ask for more time on Coruscant or one of the other core worlds, so that your working relationship with a new master can begin on more familiar ground. There are benefits and drawbacks to each option, and to other options we haven't discussed here. It's up to you to research, reflect, and give us an answer."
"I don't have to go to the frontier after all," Wreath thought. Only a few weeks before, that would have been cause for celebration. But his freedom had been bought at too high a price. His disquiet must have been apparent to the entire council, because Master Rosason gently said,
"You need not choose now. In fact, you should not. Not enough time has passed for you to make an informed choice. We only wished to make you aware that this choice is yours."
Wreath thanked them and got out of the council chambers as fast as he decently could. At least if the masters had given him this responsibility, they'd allowed him the time to think things through. When he tried imagining his future, he could only picture one thing: going back to the Amaxine station to confront Nan and Hake and arrest them if possible, to set right the one big mistake he'd ever made in his life. And that was the one future that couldn't happen. Could it? Affy had bluffed her way through the previous night, eating dinner with Scover and spending the night in her vast, luxurious hotel suite. As soft as the bed was, she'd hardly slept. Instead, she lay for hours calling upon the few memories she had of her parents. Riding in the cockpit of the Kestrel's dive on her mother's lap, amazed at the beautiful nebula they were traveling through. Paddling in the pools of Rhea, her father keeping one hand beneath her belly as she learned to swim. coming to them after a nightmare and falling asleep between them, feeling safe from any harm.
They wanted to be free while I was still young. The only way to do that was to take on Scover's dangerous assignments, so they did, and they died.
The wrongness of it all galled her, as did the knowledge that there was no way to set any of it right. Her mother and father were gone, just like poor Des Rydan. Was there really nothing she could do? At dawn, she made some highly non-specific inquiries in information bases, trying to discover whether anything Scover was doing counted as illegal. Probably not, she figured, given how the Bind Guild thrived throughout numerous systems. However, it turned out that the Republic had much more stringent rules about what indentured people could be required to do. Scover wasn't forcing anyone, but the Republic laws were thorough, indicating that overly hazardous incentives could be found to constitute a requirement in the legal sense. But the penalties were harsh. Jail time? Dissolution of any shipping company found to engage in those practices? Affy tried to imagine her life without the Bind Guild and failed.
"We give good work to a lot of people," she rationalized. "Like Leox and Geode. Most of our pilots are free. How could I force them back into being independents?"
It was hard work being an independent pilot, at least one who operated within the law. But it was also an easier question for Affy to ask herself than, could I ever put Scover in jail? There had to be another way to stop Scover from endangering her pilots. Affy racked her brain until she realized there was one thing she could do, if she had the guts to do it. That morning, she scarfed down her breakfast and made her excuses to Scover, who waved her off absently. Several of the hoped-for meetings had already been scheduled. That left Affy free to return to the space dock, walk onto the vessel's bridge, and announce,
"We have to go back to the Amaxine station."
Geode was speechless. Leox turned so slowly his beads didn't even sway and said,
"Why exactly do we have to do that?"
"Other guild pilots are using that station," she said. "Indentured people, and anybody else who's broke and desperate enough to risk their lives just for one of Scover's bonuses."
"Which is a terrible thing." Leox studied her carefully. "It's also a risk they accept. That bonus alone tells any pilot looking at it that there might be no coming back."
"She doesn't offer those runs to the pilots who are genuinely free to turn them down. Only people who are desperate. That's why none of us ever knew about the station before."
"Right, because it's a terrible place to be. And we would be going back there to do what exactly?"
Leox asked.
"To get records," she said. "To make a case. If anyone took all this to the Republic authorities and they actually listened, and it seems like they do, well, Scover would be in big trouble."
Leox folded his arms across his chest.
"Well, that's an understatement. Something like that would earn her jail time, could even lead to the dissolution of the guild. Are you ready for that?"
Affy couldn't answer that question yet. Maybe she didn't have to answer it ever.
"If I show this to Scover, she'll realize she has to back down, that she has to stop using that station and any other hazardous locales she sends indentured people to."
"You think Scover will accept that?"
Leox looked doubtful.
"She's not a lady who accepts many limitations."
Once that had been what Affy admired the most about her.
"She'll have to accept it. Besides, even if she won't listen to anyone else, she might listen to me."
"Well, she might at that," Leox said.
He still seemed doubtful.
"We need to be prepared, though. The Orinkans might have stuck around, and they probably won't be as welcoming when we don't have the Jedi at our side. I mean, the vessel's got gunnery enough to defend herself, but no more. Nor can we openly purchase a major upgrade in armaments without attracting undue attention from the authorities."
Nobody cared if they powered up in preparation to return to an ancient Axiomine station, probably,
But Affy understood that the authorities absolutely, positively could not go snooping in the secret cargo container.
We'd want more personal weapons as well.
That one we can do something about. I bet there are black market weapons for sale somewhere on Coruscant.
Elation swelled within Affy's heart until she felt as if it shone from her like sunbeams.
Geode, you know some, let's say, interesting characters? Somebody who might sell a little on the side? Maybe even a thermal detonator or two?
Geode's knowing look spoke volumes. Slowly, Leox began to smile.
All right, then. Let's get incendiary.
The millennia-old history of the Jedi meant that there was protocol or precedent for virtually every possible situation a member of the Order could wind up in, but not for making any mistake as utterly enormous as this. Orla knew the Council would have put it more elegantly than that. She preferred her own version. There was no point in trying to hide from unpleasant truths, in her opinion, and the unpleasant truth here was that they'd screwed up royally. Not everyone could accept failure so easily, which Comac Vitus was currently demonstrating. Anger roiled around him as tangible as storm clouds.
It felt like the kind of binding used with artifacts of that era. Nearly identical.
No one faults you, Master Vitus,
said Gictu, and maybe she meant it.
It can be hard to differentiate the various forms of force-bound objects. The only error here was in performing the protective ritual at the very end of your stay on the Amaxine Station.
Orla bit back her frustration as she realized Gictu was right. If we'd hung around even another day or two, we'd have recognized what we'd done. The darkness aboard the station would have manifested itself.
Your caution was understandable, Port Law insisted. You did not wish to expose yourselves and the crew of your vessel to darker powers. I cannot say you made the wrong choice.
We released something deep in the dark side.
A throb at Orla's temples presaged a headache. That feels like the wrong choice to me.
But what could it have been?
Comac said, talking more to himself than to the others in the room.
There was nothing else alive on that station save for plants, and what I sensed was far more complex than anything I've ever picked up from plants strong in darkness. Another reason the mistake was understandable, said Tia.
The only word Orla could fully take in was mistake.
The warnings, Orla said. The visions we had on the station. They weren't telling us to reckon with the darkness trapped within the idols. They were telling us the idols should be left completely alone.
Frustration grated at her. It was the way of the Force to speak in images and instincts, but Orla wished it could just be precise once in a while. Comac took a deep breath, visibly attempting to center himself. Control usually came so easily to him. The struggles he'd spoken of must have run even deeper than Orla had realized.
What's past is past. What matters is the present. What are we going to do about the Amaxine Station?
Orla hadn't had time to ask herself what came next, but the answer seemed instantly clear.
We have to return. We have to replace the seals we broke and make them even stronger than before if we can.
That would be tough. The previous seal had lasted for centuries before they came along and ruined it, but Orla was determined to try. Even though the masters all nodded, Tia said,
Not yet.
What are we waiting for? Orla said. For someone else to get hurt or killed? That station's still in use by smugglers and free traders. Even if they're engaging in illegal activity, that's no excuse for exposing them to that kind of danger.
It was Comac who answered her, though it was to the others he spoke.
Transit to that area is still hazardous. Most of the Jedi close by are assigned to Starlight Beacon and are busy handling the fallout there. You do not have the Masters to spare.
We don't need Masters,
Orla insisted.
We took that seal down on our own. We can put it back, too.
You would be unnecessarily endangering yourselves,
Port Law said.
We've lost too many courageous Jedi in this disaster to take such risks.
Yes, this must be done. The Council will soon establish a party to go to the Amaxine station. Just not yet. For now. He gestured at the idols. These should be removed to a safer location, and the shrine sealed once again.
Of course, I will take charge of it personally.
Komak accepted so easily that Orla felt she couldn't object without coming across like a crank. As they left the chamber, Orla's head was pounding. She was determined to talk with Komak and see if she couldn't win him over. If both of them presented a united front, the Council might actually listen. Instead, almost as soon as the doors had closed, Komak turned to her and spoke under his breath.
You will notice that they didn't actually forbid us to go.
They didn't, did they?
Orla's head felt better already.
On our first mission together, we made a mistake, Komak said. Now we have made another. But this one, at least, we can put right. And I intend to do it.
Acceptance, even resignation, was a skill the Jedi were meant to master. All their skills and all their authority could not set every situation right. The Order might call on them to do things and go places they would not have chosen. Any great Jedi could accept this swiftly and even painlessly. It was a skill Wreath was still working on with little success. Since he had no assigned tasks at the moment and no master to assign any, he was responsible for filling his own time. Memories of Master Jorah and Dez pricked him from every side. Everything he'd done or learned during the past few years was tied to one or both of the people he'd lost. Concentration was impossible. Instead, he'd taken himself to his favorite place, the only sure source of comfort he knew. In the vast archive chambers, Wreath sat inside his old, comfortable carrel with one of the texts he'd neglected in recent years. One that retold the fairy tales and legends of the core worlds. These figures were all familiar from songs and rhymes taught to children, even within the temples. Some of them were even rooted in fact, like good Princess Chea of Alderaan, or the Ithorian pirate Bluebrow. Like the Amaxine warriors. He scrolled through the images of the Amaxine's armor, ships, and weapons, most of them artistic representations found in ancient art. But there were real artifacts pictured, too. As Wreath studied the images, he saw patterns with endless circles, looped together, sequenced, enclosing each other, whether etched in metal or painted on vessels. No wonder they built a spherical station with rings around it, he thought. Circles meant something to them. Maybe some of the legends will explain why. Before he could scroll any further, however, another person edged into his carrel.
Hey, Wreath said. This one's taken... Master Komak?
Good afternoon, Wreath.
Master Komak wore the hood of his gold cloak up, which wasn't unusual for him, but at the moment seemed somewhat furtive. His voice was lowered, too, though that was the rule in the archives.
I saw that you requested to return to the Amaxine station.
Yeah.
Wreath sat up straight and brushed his brown hair back from his face.
For all the good it did. You saw about Nan and Haig, too, right?
Correct.
Master Komak didn't seem nearly interested enough in the fact that they'd been bamboozled by the Nihil.
Also, we have discovered that the darkness we encountered on the Amaxine station was not bound within the idols at all. They served as suppressors and as sentries. By removing the idols, we set that darkness free. This cannot be allowed to stand.
It took Wreath a moment to process that.
Wait, we weren't supposed to move the idols?
Master Komak winced as though in pain.
So it would appear. It is important that the idols be returned to the station and that the darkness is again suppressed.
It was flattering to be asked for help with the binding ritual, which was surely what this was about, but Wreath felt it only fair to explain that he had a completely different agenda.
I asked for permission to go back to the station to seize Haig and Nan. They refused and said they couldn't spare anybody, even a Padawan. Did the Council reverse their decision because of the idols?
No, that decision is final. However, nobody has been forbidden to travel to the Amaxine Station. You and I are both currently at liberty, as is Orla Jorenni, who shares our concerns. My personal stipend would cover the hire of a ship, preferably the vessel, as they can make an informed choice about the dangers inherent in traveling there.
So you're suggesting we go rogue? Oppose the Council?
The Council has not explicitly forbidden this, nor would I describe it as a rogue action. Master Comac turned out to have a very sly smile. I prefer to think of it as showing initiative.
Every single second Wreath had spent on the Amaxine Station had been proof that adventures were not for him. At all. But he couldn't leave a task unfinished. He whispered, "Do we have to come up with a cover story?"
"No, we do not lie. We simply go."
"What do we need to bring?" Wreath tried to think of special devices that might help them capture the Nihil. Master Comac, however, was clearly thinking more about the darkness they would again encounter.
"We need the idols."
That had been mentioned before, but only now did Wreath see the full implications. "We're stealing them? Okay, cool to spend more time with historical artifacts. Not cool that we have to somehow get them out of the temple without being noticed."
"They are the only objects that we know to be powerful enough to counter that darkness. So, we take up burglary."
Wreath hesitated before saying, "You made a joke."
"It has been known to occur," Master Comac said, straight-faced. "The Council tasked me with removing the idols from their place in the temple and finding a more suitable location for them. It just so happens that the most suitable location is back on the Amaxine Station."
Smiling for a change felt good, but Wreath's grin was short-lived. "It's just us? Nan and Haig didn't look like deadly warriors, but I'd bet anything they've got weaponry aboard that ship."
"No doubt you are correct."
Master Comac became even graver than usual.
"Be aware, Padawan Silas, that the journey we are undertaking is extremely dangerous. When we run into trouble, we will not be able to call upon the Jedi Order or the Republic for help. What we do here, we do alone. Consider this carefully before you accept."
"I realized that part from the beginning," Wreath said. "I'm in." Affy was double-checking the landing gear of the vessel when she heard footsteps behind her. Scover, she thought, and her gut dropped. Instead, it turned out to be Wreath Silas and Comac Vitus, both of them wearing their cloaks with the hoods up like it was windy and rainy instead of a totally beautiful day. Comac seemed serene, but Wreath's eyes darted from side to side in a manner she could only call sneaky.
"Ms. Hollow," said Comac, "we wish to hire the vessel again, privately this time, for another trip to the Amaxine Station, if you would consider such a thing."
"More than consider it." Affy wiped her greasy hands on a rag as she got to her feet. "We'd take that charter in an instant. Problem is, somebody else already hired us." Wreath's shoulders sagged. Even Comac looked disappointed.
"May I ask how long that customer's journey will take?"
"Ask our passenger." She pointed to the gangway where Orla Jorenni had just stepped out to collect the last of their things. Orla grinned. "I'm sorry, Affy. Did I not mention that the others would be coming with me?"
"No, you did not."
Affy did some quick calculations of risk in her head, but ultimately simply waved at the others in welcome. Comac raised an eyebrow.
"Were there any problems removing the idols?"
"Not one bit," Orla said. "Everyone assumed I was taking them to a research facility. I just never happened to mention which one. As long as we research them a bit on the way, I say the vessel's as good a facility as any." After that, all three Jedi huddled together at the nearest docking arch in the spaceport, discussing their plans in hushed tones.
Affy watched them from the cockpit, standing between Leox and Geode.
"Should we tell them we were going there anyway?"
Affy asked.
"And reduce their fee?"
Leox shook his head.
"Man needs bread,"